Hello and welcome to the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Phil Dave, and coming up on this show: following grime artist Wiley's anti-Semitic rant on social media, Danny Stone, the chief executive from the Anti-Semitism Policy Trust, talks about actions that could and should be taken to prevent similar further incidents. Jennifer Gerber has quit as the director of Labour Friends of Israel. During her 10 years, she's had to deal with plenty. We'll hear what it was like and what's next for her. And comedian Ashley Blaker is back again with us as he offers a humorous outlook on life as we've come to know it. But before all of that, it's time for a look through your copy of the Jewish News for this week. And joining me to go through it is features editor Fran Wolfish and supplements editor Bridget Grant. This is a rare treat. Welcome to you both.
Hi, Phil.
Hi, Phil.
Let's have a look at the front page, as is tradition. And Silence Speaks is the headline, 1,000 words. Now, this is obviously the fallout from the main subject of today's podcast. And that is, of course, the Twitter and other social media platform rant courtesy of Richard Cowie, a.k.a. Wiley. Quite extraordinary, really, isn't it?
I mean, there's the whole thing is extraordinary. Extraordinary in that, well, for someone like me, I hadn't even heard of Wiley before this all blew up. I know lots of other people had. Perhaps I'm just not, you know, au fait with the grime scene. But I do think this has massively boosted his profile in a strange sort of way. We all know who Wiley is now. We all know that Wiley had an MBE, and we all know that Wiley spouted off some terrible, disgusting anti-Semitic posts that went on social media over the last weekend. And there's all sorts of things that we can talk about just on that issue. But then, of course, what the front page picks up is why the social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, were just so slow in responding to this. I mean, he was really going down dark roads trying to prove how awful Jews as a nation are, and everyone who's Jewish, and all clumped in together. And I understand he had a sort of personal beef with his manager, but somehow we were all in this together and we were all being blamed. There was no sort of, you know, blurred lines on this, and social media platforms did nothing for quite a few days. It took them time to take his profile down. But the other question that I have that's come out of this, which our front page doesn't address, is, you know, the people who stayed silent, not out of protest, who just stayed silent.
This is what's so extraordinary, though, isn't it, Bridget, is that the number of people who were very vocal about, let's be honest, about the Black Lives Matter movement.
And they jumped on that bandwagon very fast.
But some might say quite rightly so. There's nothing wrong with coming out and standing against racism. But this form of racism, for some reason, they weren't as vocal. And it's disappointing that it seems to have taken at least a week to build any sort of momentum.
Well, that's also true. I mean, it's remarkable to me that, you know, someone tweets something on their phone or says something on their phone and it changes their entire life. Everyone else responds to it and you know, becomes another blip on the landscape of anti-Semitism. But the worst part about this is, you know, yes, people have stayed silent. I mean, let's face it, Twitter took forever to take Katie Hopkins off. There have been lots of people who've said really rubbish stuff about other groups, other people, and have not been kicked off. Everybody jumped on this. And now what's happening is that Wiley is being given the platform at another newspaper. I'm not even going to mention it because it doesn't deserve the credit, but the opportunity to explain exactly what he was meaning by his outbursts, i.e. he was actually attributing it to his Jewish management, to Jewish accountants, right? So now, right, this, what this does is it immediately alerts other people who may not have had those prejudices to the fact that, well, maybe their Jewish accountant is doing something. The danger with falling on this and screaming about it so loudly is that it raises so many other issues that we could well do without rising. And on top of that, we have the weakest, most pathetic group of Jewish celebrities in this country. Beyond Tracy Ann Oberman, Rachel Riley and Maureen Lipman, we cannot get one of them, apart from Lord Sugar, to rouse themselves, to be angry about anything. They'll stand up for climate change, anything they can, but they will never join us on our newspaper or on this platform to talk about things that we're upset about.
But I would say, just before we move on to the next story, that I do believe that it is most appropriate that Wiley is associated with grime. Okay, let's have a look at page 21 of the paper now. And Fran, you've been speaking to Miriam Margolyes.
In the week that we've had Wiley, who really is anti-Semitic, to Miriam Margolyes, who's been accused of being anti-Semitic, she is appearing in a online production, very interesting play actually by Louise Coulthard, about experiencing dementia in lockdown. And I was speaking to her about that. It's called Watching Rosie. I was speaking to her about that, but also I wanted her to address some of these accusations that have been hurled at her in the sort of the recent past, even mostly because of her, shall we say, quite left-wing views on Israel. She is pro-boycott, she's pro-Corbyn, but one thing that she is not is she's not an anti-Semite. We talked a lot about that. She has personally been abused, received emails of hatred, people have called her worse than Hitler, and really I wanted to sort of get underneath that, and she took it very, very personally, actually. She said that she is not anti-Jewish, she's actually very pro-Jewish, and she was extremely proud of her Judaism and talked at length about how proud she is of her Jewish identity, how her Jewishness, if you will, has influenced who she is and her personality and her career. And of course, she did talk about her views on Israel and on Netanyahu and on Corbyn and Livingston, and it's all in my interview. And I felt that we came to a place where perhaps I still don't agree with many of the things that she sees as being true, but that is her truth. And I think as a person, she genuinely is quite a nice person. That's how I came away from that.
I have to be honest, I've met Miriam Margolyes, and I found her to be, although quite feisty, a very nice person. It just so happens that she is one of, let's be honest, quite a number of Jews who are against a lot of the policies of the Israeli government. The difference is that she's quite vocal about it, whereas many just remain silent and just almost graciously accept that there's not a lot that they can do about it, possibly fueled by the notion that so many people are anti-Israel at the best of times that it doesn't really take members of our own community to also be anti-Israel. Let's end on a high note, shall we? We heard about him in the last couple of weeks because he was the man behind the album covers from the Sidmar Lodge care home in northwest London. Robert Speaker is back in the paper again because, Bridget, you've been nattering to him.
Well, I have, because when that all sort of took off for him, he was, as a carer, unaware of how tricky the media can be. He was getting calls from everyone and he was going on a shift. And when I spoke to him on that Sunday morning, I volunteered to help him field the calls. So, because I'm more at home in that place than he would be. So he put my number on his phone and I dealt with all the inquiries. So I know just how much interest there was from networks across the world. He was on Australian television, CNN in America. He was, you know, trending on all their websites. And the thing is that what they didn't know about Robert, because obviously he was only talking about this amazing recreation of all the number of the residents into album covers, but what they didn't see was all the stuff that he had done in the months beforehand, where he has been entertaining those people who have not been seeing their families at all during lockdown. And every day he would go in there, apart from playing the piano, he would use anniversaries of stupid things like apples or beer to keep them entertained. Every day was excitement for him. And I sort of likened him in the piece to, you know, when the film Cocoon from years ago, I'm old enough to remember that, the film Cocoon, when the elderly people in a care home are embodied by aliens and taken over and they get this new lease of life. And Robert is a bit like the alien in that movie, in that he goes in there and he creates a merry havoc for these people who sit there endlessly, who haven't seen their families. The strange thing is, there's probably a place for someone like Robert in every care home across the land, but they're lucky enough to have him and they better hold on to him tight. I wouldn't be surprised if someone snaps him up.
Oh, I tell you what, after this, he's going to be poached. There's no doubt about it. And I have to also declare as well that I've known Robert for a long, long time and I can hand on heart say one of the nicest people I know. So that's, I'm afraid, where we have to leave it though. It's nice to end on a positive note from the paper review for this week. But don't forget that you can always collect your copy of the Jewish News every Thursday. And if you happen to be stuck indoors at the moment, you can see the full paper as it would be printed online at jewishnews.co.uk. Features editor Fran Wolfish, supplements editor Bridget Grant. Thank you both very much indeed.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks, Phil.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. As you've just been hearing, in a rant that spanned 2 days, Richard Cowie, aka Wiley, spewed anti-Semitic venom across various social media platforms. At first, social media giants didn't take much action, but eventually leading to a week-long suspension and then finally a ban, but only after enough outrage was seen. Well, how can we do more to try and prevent this from happening in future? Danny Stone is the chief executive of the Anti-Semitism Policy Trust. Danny, I personally really struggle with the fact that in the age 2020, where racism is supposed to be abhorrent to all, here we are, you and I, talking about someone who really should have known better, in the limelight, abusing their position of fame, let's be honest, to really spout bile. It just seems baffling that you and I are even having this conversation, really.
It does, but we have to take into account that we live in a very different world to the one that I presume you and certainly I grew up in, which is that, you know, people didn't used to be able to go on social media and suddenly broadcast to 500,000 people. If something was said in a pub, we wouldn't know about it. Right. And that's what it was. It was low level racism. And that's the danger of social. You know, there's lots of great things about social media, but that's the danger, is that it's so much easier for anti-Semitism, other forms of racism, for conspiracy theories to circulate, but to have that much greater amplification and pickup. It's a challenging world, at least.
Well, at the best of times, I would have thought those who do fight against anti-Semitism and all forms of racism have to deal with the sheep mentality, don't they? Where just someone might not necessarily know what the heck they're talking about, but they hear someone else talk about it. And this is across the board, let's be honest. We've seen this in the world of politics, when it comes to the world of even something supposedly trivial as celebrity. You know, there are many examples of those who think they know a subject or an individual based on what they've heard or seen on social media, and then they just follow suit. They don't check it. They're not interested in the facts. They just copy it. Sheep mentality is a big problem in tackling this, isn't it?
Well, so there's actually some academic research on this, and it calls the phenomenon the elastic approach to anti-Semitism. That is, we know there's a certain proportion of anti-Semites in the UK, right? Depending on how you categorize it, 2.4 to 3.5% of people are anti-Semites, and that means that they believe or agree with a number, and the way this was codified, they believe or agree with a number of anti-Semitic statements. It only takes the 2.4% to share something or put it out there before that idea spreads, catches fire, goes through to a wider group of people who unknowingly, naively, will pick some of this up and then repeat it, right? So I think there is possibly, you know, a general kind of anti-Semitic attitude out there amongst a certain segment of the population about Jews, you know, that feeds on these age-old tropes of power, of control, And that is deeply problematic, and we need to challenge it. And that is all the harder when, you know, if you don't have a widespread education out there about those tropes, you can't get other people to challenge it. So, yeah, having bystanders is deeply problematic.
Well, as I've said on other platforms, if we do have all the money, why the hell haven't I seen any of it? Anyway, let's move that to one side. And in particular, I know that Anti-Semitism Policy Trust is working, I'm sure, with many other people to try and combat similar incidents happening in future. What is it that you guys are working on?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's been over many years, I've written in the Jewish News about it just this week, there's been over many years efforts to try and address harms on social media through different bits of legislation, through meetings, both with the social media companies and with government. And we're right about to see a new piece of legislation being brought forward by government. Now, we were hoping it would be in already. It's not come yet. It's called the Online Harms Bill. The expectation is what this will do is introduce a regulator into the social media environment. So like there's Ofcom for TV, for newspapers. So there'll be a regulator. And that regulator, one of the key things that we're pushing for is that that regulator will apply what's called a duty of care. And that means the platforms will have to not only have standards, which we would expect them to have, but where they fail to meet those standards or apply them properly, they will be fined. And we'd like to see individual liability for senior managers in those social media companies, because that will certainly focus minds. So having some form of body that one can, they're going to call them super complaints, can make super complaints to, and a body that can issue fines and hold the platforms to account is a really important step. And that's what we're beginning to push for.
And just at a local level, there may be some people who think, well, what can I do? How can I help this fight and raising awareness? I know from a technical point of view, the most important thing that any social media user can use is to actually just report anything you see online that is either anti-Semitic or racist, whatever it is, anything that doesn't comply with civilized behavior and that you believe would break the law if it was done in person, they can report it. But what's your stance on what they should be doing?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to just encountering this stuff, reporting it is really important, because, you know, if we don't, then this stuff doesn't get flagged, and then it can't go through the appropriate processes for review. Now, there are, you know, the CST, the Community Security Trust, and ourselves have trusted flagger status. So we will always be, you know, whenever content it comes through to us, we'll always be reporting it. And sometimes that content will be prioritized for review. But actually, all of those individual flags are important. However, with this online harms bill coming forward, equally, it's important for people to write to their members of parliament in different constituencies and say, right, we know there's some legislation coming forward. Can we have it, please? We'd like it really fast, because this is an issue that isn't going away. And if they want to look at some of the specifics of what we're recommending on our website, antisemitism.org.uk, on the resources page, they can find a briefing about the bill, which provides some of our thinking on what should be in the bill. And if they want to put that in their letters to the MPs, by all means, they can do so.
Excellent. Well, Danny Stone, Chief Executive of the Anti-Semitism Policy Trust, thank you so much, not just for speaking to me on the Jewish News podcast, but for all you're doing in a bid to try and help with this particular problem. Thank you. This is the Jewish News podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, on to a slightly different subject, but possibly no less heavy. It's been announced that Director of Labour Friends of Israel, Jennifer Gerber, is to step down from her position after 10 years. And my, what a turbulent 10 years it must have been. To find out exactly what it entailed, I am very pleased to say that Jennifer joins me here on the Jewish News podcast. Jennifer, first and foremost, welcome. Secondly, my goodness me, you chose the right decade to be involved.
I know. It's been really sweet. Lots of people who have got in touch have basically said, my goodness, what a 10 years. And basically I took over after we'd had a Labour government for 13 years, and there'd been traditionally a very good and strong relationship between the Labour Prime Minister and Labour Friends of Israel and obviously Israel. So yes, I didn't quite know what was ahead of me. But it was, you know, it has been challenging, and it has been a difficult 10 years. But, you know, what I can say now is I think we got through it.
Let's pick up on that, because that's what a lot of people will want to know, because obviously you have stuck by your party through thick and thin, very thin to say the least. But the point is that you believe now that Labour are through the worst, there's no chance of anything bubbling to the surface, perhaps?
I mean, what I've learned, and I think anyone who works in politics learns, is never say never. But I do think there's a marked change with Keir. And I think he has seen what's happened. I think the whole party, the MPs, the majority of members are deeply ashamed of what happened to the Labour Party over the last 5 years under Jeremy Corbyn. And I've been incredibly relieved and heartened to hear what Keir has got to say about dealing with the anti-Semitism in the party. And I also think, you know, he said himself, it's not just, you know, it can't be just words, it's got to be action. So I think he is committed. However, the caveat is, I think it's going to be really hard. I think it's going to have to be a commitment for an awfully long time. The anti-Semitism is not going to go away overnight, and it won't just go away because you've got Keir rather than Jeremy Corbyn. I think it's unfortunately quite deep within the party or elements of the party. So I think it's going to have to be a concerted effort in terms of rooting it out and dealing with it. But I do think Keir and the people around him understand that. And I am hopeful that we will see, you know, we will see better days, because quite frankly, the last 5 years were utterly shameful. And I think, like most Jews, there was, you know, huge relief when Jeremy Corbyn didn't become prime minister. And that's a terrible place to be in a mainstream party.
And I shouldn't wonder, it must be a terrible thing for you, who is obviously a public figure for said party in one way or another, to have to admit what a relief that the leader of your party didn't get into power.
Yeah, I never thought, I mean, before, you know, I might have had differences with other leaders, in particular Ed Miliband, but I wasn't fearful of them becoming prime minister. And I think this is why I say never, it never occurred to me as a Labour Party member when I joined the party, oh my goodness, 22, 23 years ago, that I would ever feel uncomfortable and fearful because I'm Jewish. And I think that what it shows is we always have to be so, you know, you can't take anything for granted. And what happened in the Labour Party, in some ways it did happen overnight with the election of Jeremy Corbyn, but in other ways things had been bubbling under the surface for a while. So I think in terms of society and everyone being vigilant, it's a real story for people to learn from, basically.
Well, let's focus on more positive, because Keir has pledged that he is going to visit Israel as soon as he possibly can. Did he give you any indication of when that might be?
He didn't, to be honest. I mean, he said, because we spoke to him, was it last week? Yeah, the week before, in a really positive meeting, actually. He said as soon as possible. And to be honest, I think in terms of travelling, the issue is slightly more, unfortunately, on the Israel side at the moment, because they are regrettably experiencing a little bit of a spike in cases, having dealt with it incredibly well. So I get the impression that as soon as it is safe to fly, I mean, he can't be in a situation where he flies somewhere and quarantines for 2 weeks when he gets back, he will come out. But he was really, I think he understood the importance of that visit. He understands the symbolism of it. And I got every impression that he will be coming out with us ASAP. And the sadness is, if this were, you know, if it wasn't for COVID, we would have had a Labour conference in September where he would have been able to speak at our reception, something Jeremy Corbyn, you know, hasn't done for a very long time, or when he did, couldn't even utter the word Israel. So it's a shame in a way that the opportunities that Keir would have had aren't there. But knowing that, I think he will do his best to come out and also speak at the big lunch we have every year, which is traditionally where the Prime Minister, Labour Prime Minister or leader of the party speaks. And obviously, again, we've not had Jeremy Corbyn there for obvious reasons.
Would you say that MPs that you've spoken to have been particularly riled by everything that's going on with annexation laws in Israel at the moment? Because it seems to be across the board, doesn't matter which party, that some might say understandably, there are concerns about Israel's actions over annexation.
I think that's true. I think a lot of Labour MPs and in, you know, that's including friends of Israel who have always supported LFI in the past, find annexation deeply worrying, because they support two states, they support bilateral measures to get there, and they see something like this as a worrying divergence from that. And I think also the reality is in this country, you know, kind of Labour Friends of Israel's Labour, you have, you know, you've got a right wing government in Israel. So there will always be those disagreements. And I think the reason why a lot of MPs wanted to speak quite vocally is a fear in their mind that this just makes peace even harder. And we at LFI, you know, we've come out and said we don't support annexation, we support negotiations. Now, whether you end up with those areas as part of Israel proper for a negotiation process is something else. However, where we do disagree and where I've been talking to them through kind of the issue and trying to be very kind of honest is what should our reaction be? And I don't think boycotts or divestments or sanctions are the answer. I think things that pull people apart aren't helpful. And I think it's symbolic, it won't make a difference. So I do understand why there is concern and share that concern. The other thing I hasten to add is, the you know, we always make the point that there are lots of reasons why we haven't seen peace in the Middle East. And part of them undoubtedly is the actions of the Israeli government, but also looking at the Palestinian Authority and their responsibility. So it's always trying to understand that the situation is complex and there's nuance. And in understanding that, you're better placed to hopefully help.
Well, let's bring this subject back to you. Where are you off to next?
I am off to work for the NHS. So something completely different, away from politics, but working as head of comms for a group of hospital trusts. So hopefully getting involved in a slightly different range of issues. But I actually very briefly worked at the Department of Health when I was a special advisor in government for Andy Burnham many years ago. So in a way, it feels like I'm going full circle a little bit. But I will miss LFI, because despite the kind of the challenge of the last 10 years, I've got to work with some remarkable people and also advocate for a country I love.
Well, now it's time for a bit of modesty. Because what would you say your greatest achievement in the past 10 years has been?
Surviving. Surviving with a sense of humour, which has got progressively darker as the years have gone on. My colleagues and I would always laugh at some of the various things that went on. Slightly more seriously, we were able to do quite a lot of work on persuading the government to spend money on people-to-people projects, which were bringing Israelis and Palestinians together. And we got £3 million committed. And actually, in opposition, it can, you know, when the party kind of you support is in opposition, it's often a bit depressing because you can't do anything. And actually, that was amazing because it was a campaign that we achieved. And I also think, on the slightly more political side, helping Keir and others understand that if you want to make the Labour Party a safe space for Jews, they are going to have to deal with the obsession with Israel. And I think it was really only LFI who were making that case, which is to say, you know, it's traditional anti-Semitism, you have to fight at all levels, but you do have to fight the kind of anti-Zionism aspect, which can tip over into anti-Semitism. So I think kind of those things were, when I look back, I think also, you know, I worked with just some amazing members of parliament, and particularly, you know, brave MPs like Joan Ryan and Louise Elman. I have to give them a shout, who ended up leaving the Labour Party because of anti-Semitism. They were our chairs and they were so brave. So, you know, getting to work with them and to fight the good fight, I think is, you know, something I'll be forever grateful for.
And I dare say one mustn't forget the plight of Luciana Berger as well. But one way...
And I'm, you know, I will forever, I mean, Luciana stood to be MP in where I live. And I think so many people felt real sadness that she wasn't elected and returned to Parliament. And I think the bravery that she, you know, that kind of her and other Jewish MPs and non-Jewish MPs shown is actually quite remarkable.
Well, as is the last 10 years of your work. So all that's left for me to do is say, Jennifer Gerber, mazel tov on the new position. I dare say that NHS's gain is LFI's loss. And thank you very much indeed for speaking to me on this edition of the Jewish News Podcast.
Been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Time now for a humorous outlook on life, courtesy of comedian Ashley Blaker.
Hello, Ashley Blaker here, speaking to you on the Jewish News Podcast. And if you're wondering why I'm speaking in such a somber way, it's because today is Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av, the saddest day in the Jewish calendar, when we remember a number of disasters that occurred in Jewish history, primarily the destruction of both the temples, but we also remember many other tragic events, such as massacres in Jewish communities during the Crusades and, of course, the Holocaust. And fittingly, in the week of Tisha B'Av, anti-Semitism has been back in the news. When isn't it in the news, to be honest? But it has been back in the news in a big way, thanks to the grime artist Wiley. I must be honest, I'm going to sound like a very old fogey, but I'd never even heard of him until Saturday night. When I read that musician Wiley had been anti-Semitic, I was thinking it must be the radio DJ Joe Wiley. I'd never heard of this guy. But then again, he's probably not heard of me either, so we're equal in that regard. And of course, this led to a 48-hour Twitter walkout from Jews and allies of Jews. And it does seem remarkable that this all happened this week, the week of Tisha B'Av. But then again, anti-Semitism is really growing at the moment, particularly during the last minute or so. Everyone remembers their first anti-Semitic incident. Someone came at me with a knife. I was only 8 days old. I vividly remember coming in from school one day, crying because I'd been bullied at school for being Jewish. At a Jewish school as well, which makes it worse. And I remember my father was very kind. He put his arm around me, said to me, "Don't cry. You're going to find throughout your life there will always be people who hate you." You know, I told that story at a show last year, and a woman came up to me afterwards and asked, was that story true? And it was my mum, and she wasn't very impressed. Now, that was primary school, but for secondary school, I didn't go to a Jewish school. Instead, I went to a place called Haberdashers Asks in Elstree, Hertfordshire. Well, I say I didn't go to a Jewish school. Of course, anyone who went to Haberdashers in this era would be forgiven for thinking differently. Only at a pseudo-Jewish school like Haberdashers would a non-Jewish boy in my year, called Alistair Wilson, give himself the nickname Yocky Wilson. Now, if that's not a Jewish school, I don't know what is. But it definitely wasn't officially a Jewish school. And in fact, despite there being lots of Jewish boys, oddly, the teachers were often hugely anti-Semitic. Or perhaps that should be because they taught so many Jewish boys, the teachers were often hugely anti-Semitic. So every year on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, when 40% of the school would be absent, our biology teacher would apparently start lessons by saying, "Let's work really hard today so the Jews can't catch up." Can you imagine saying that now? He'd have a number one rap single. Had I been in biology class, I like to think I'd have told him to go and sexually reproduce himself. And he wasn't even the worst. My biology teacher, Mr. Benbow, once said to me, "Blake, you're a damned lazy Jew who all the teachers hate." I went and told the head of sixth form, who replied, "Well, you're not that lazy." Meanwhile, our music teacher, Mr. Rose, would tell us, "Jews sing through their noses." Perhaps they do, but it hasn't done Barry Manilow or Barbara Streisand any harm. Even when they made concessions to the Jewish peoples, it was done in the most grudging way. So while we were allowed to wait outside the assembly hall when they were singing hymns, once they were finished with "Onward Christian Soldiers," the headmaster would genuinely stand up and say, "Let in the Jews." I think we spent so many years not being allowed into things, this actually felt quite welcoming. Likewise, we were allowed to do Jewish Studies GCSE with a Jewish woman known as Mrs. F. But the school didn't let us do enough lessons in the week to learn the syllabus, so boys had to go to her house for extra lessons after school. And to make it just a little bit more Jewish, she only took cash. I can make that joke. Wiley, you can't. And anti-Semitism is something I've experienced all my working life. I was once producing a TV show, and I had on a non-Jewish comedian who told a joke about a man who gets into a taxi in Jerusalem. And he says to the driver, "Take me to the place where all the Jews go to cry." So he took him to the tax office. See, quite a funny joke when I tell it. But should a non-Jewish comedian be telling that joke at our expense? Anti-Semitism has become such an issue here in the UK. Last year, I actually organised a one-day hunger strike as an act of protest. I'm not a complete idiot, so I planned it for Yom Kippur. Now, having said all of this, when it comes to going on holiday, everyone I know is desperate to go where there won't be other Jews. You know, we live amongst each other, So when it comes to going on holiday, we want to go where no one will know us. So for 50 weeks of the year, we're all fighting anti-Semitism. And then for 2 weeks, we all become the world's biggest anti-Semites. We went to Portugal, and it was wonderful. No Jews! Oh, we went to the south of France, and it was awful. Full of Jews. Well, unfortunately, very few of us are going to be going away this year. I'm certainly not going to take the risk of having to spend 14 days quarantined in the house with my children. But while very few of us are going away, sadly, anti-Semitism doesn't seem to be going away either. I'll see you next week. Bye.
Thank you very much to comedian Ashley Blaker there with his take on life as we've come to know it. And that's it for this edition of the Jewish News Podcast, brought to you in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. To find out more, visit gpg.org. All that's left for me to do is to thank all of our guests: Danny Stone from the Anti-Semitism Policy Trust, Jennifer Gerber, and of course, comedian Ashley Blaker. Thank you also goes to our paper team, Bridget Grant and Francine Wolfish. And we must also thank news editor Justin Cohen for producing this episode. Oh, and thanks to you as well for listening. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast application. That way you'll be able to hear any previous episode or be informed when new episodes become available. And don't forget that for more information on any of the stories that we've featured, you can always go to jewishnews.co.uk. If you'd like to comment on anything you've heard, then we'd love to hear from you. You can email editorial@thejngroup.com. That's editorial@thejngroup.com. From me, Phil Dave, do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast. Goodbye.